Let's start the next chapter then, which has to do with transport of materials into or out of cells. And not only into or out of cells, but actually into or out of organelles. We can see that in this opening slide. It's just a generalized view of a eukaryotic cell with its various organelle complement that we've talked about. Well, of course, it has a plasma membrane. Things have to get into and out of the cell through the plasma membrane. Oxygen and carbon dioxide, for instance, are being traded here. But there are also various ions that are being moved through the plasma membrane. Well, just getting something into the cell isn't enough when you have a eukaryotic cell. You have to get things also into other organelles. So membranes of all sorts need to have the correct kind of transport available to them for the correct types of things to get into or out of that compartment. And that's why we don't have just phospholipid bilayers making up these membranes. That's the substructure, but we have various kinds of proteins embedded in these membranes so that things that wouldn't normally permeate through the phospholipid bilayer can get through. All right. So this is just a catch-all picture showing you many examples, but we're going to talk about different types of transport starting now in slide 2. So you have kind of a dichotomy, first of all. So two major categories. Well, I shouldn't say two. It's not really a dichotomy unless you restrict yourself first. If you don't restrict yourself, there are three major categories of transport that can get things into or out of a cell. What are the three? What is it? Not simple and not facilitated, but I'll give you active. Active transport is one of the three mechanisms. That's not a mechanism, actually. That's something that is important for one of the kinds of transport. Simple diffusion is a specific case of one of the categories. Well, you have active, but the other is not inactive. It's what? Passive transport. Okay, that's two. Diffusion is a specific case of passive transport. What else? Did someone say it? Yeah, vesicular transport is the third. Vesicular transport simply means transport using a vesicle to get something into or out of the cell. And really, vesicular transport is not actually a transmembrane transport mechanism. Because in vesicular transport, whatever it is being transported into or out of the cell, or out of that compartment, does not actually go through a membrane. Kind of cheats in a way and gets around that requirement. But for active and passive transport, that's truly transmembrane transport, meaning something is going to permeate through a membrane in one direction or the other. All right, so those are the three major categories. Only two of those are shown here, active and passive. Now, the distinction between active and passive, which are, in a sense, opposites of each other based on the criterion we use to make these categories, is the expenditure of additional energy. And notice that I stressed the word additional there. So you probably have learned somewhere along the line, maybe in grade school, that active transport requires energy, passive transport doesn't require energy. Not true. You don't transport anything for absolute free where there's no energy involved in moving things, right? So passive transport requires energy as well. It's just the energy that drives passive transport already exists in the system. You don't have to provide additional energy. It's built in. On the other hand, active transport does require expenditure of additional energy that's not built into the system. So what is this built-in source of energy that drives passive transport? Diffusion is the actual process, but what is it that drives diffusion? The gradient, right. If you have a gradient, whatever kind of gradient you're talking about, that is a form of stored energy. And therefore, a gradient, if you set the system up properly, that gradient can do some work for you. Well, in the case of passive transport, you have either a purely chemical gradient or you have an electrochemical gradient. Either one of those, though, is what actually moves the thing that is permeating the membrane. By the way, a purely chemical gradient, what I mean by that is that there's no charges involved, so they're not charged particles. But what is a gradient in general? Doesn't have necessarily anything to do with concentration. That's just one form of a gradient. There's a pressure gradient. There's a gradient of electrical potential energy, which is what we call a voltage.
Difference?
Yes, a gradient is a difference. So there's a difference in some measurement between two points. Point A and point B have a different value for something, right? Like the pressure gradient that always makes the water come out of the hose, not go into it. It's because the pressure inside the hose is greater than outside. So water moves down its pressure gradient, we say. Well, when we're talking about transmembrane transport into or out of a cellular compartment via passive transport, then the thing that is driving that is either a concentration gradient or an electrochemical gradient. Well, actually, an electrochemical gradient is a special case of a concentration gradient. A run-of-the-mill concentration gradient would mean that you have a gradient for some non-charged particle. An electrochemical gradient means you have a concentration gradient of something that has charge. So not only is there a chemical gradient, but there's also a gradient with respect to electrical charges because each of those particles is carrying a charge. All right. Well, that's what actually drives the diffusion, the gradient itself. And if there is no gradient, which means the concentration is the same in point A as point B, then there's going to be no tendency for that particle to move in either direction more than the other. And therefore, the lack of a gradient is not going to do any work for you because that particle is going to move from A to B just as much as it's going to move from B to A. There's going to be no net diffusion if there's no concentration. Well, passive transport is diffusion, but we can talk about it in different ways. There are different subcategories of diffusion. We have what we call simple diffusion, but often we don't bother to say simple. We just say diffusion. Simple diffusion, though, means whatever the permeating particle is, the thing that's actually crossing the membrane, that thing has the correct properties for it to be able to go directly through the phospholipid bilayer. And so, what kind of things are able to do this? Small enough and nonpolar. Right. If they're nonpolar, they are hydrophobic. Just like the tails of the phospholipids on the interior or the thickness of the membrane. So they have no problem slipping right through there. Small enough and nonpolar. If you're either polar or too big, that can't happen very readily. Of course, some of them sneak past. Like water itself, for instance. Water is polar, right? You wouldn't expect water to easily go through the phospholipid bilayer, but thousands and thousands of molecules are doing it all the time, every second. It's just that they don't get through there as easily as they would if they were nonpolar. So there is some leakage. The barrier is not perfect when we talk about the permeability barrier. Anyway, for things that are big enough or nonpolar or both, then a concentration gradient isn't going to, even though a concentration gradient might be in place, there's not going to be very appreciable amount of diffusion of that stuff simply because, for chemical reasons, right? Avoidance of that hydrophobic thickness. And that's why we would need, in that case, a transport protein of some type. But if that particle is permeating via diffusion, meaning it's going down its gradient, it's going from where there is a higher concentration to where there is a lower concentration, using its own energy, the energy of that gradient, that's what makes it diffusion. If that's happening, but using a protein to allow for that to happen, then that is still diffusion, it's just facilitated diffusion. Because the protein, by helping out, is facilitating the process. There are two major categories, functionally speaking, of transport proteins. Who wants to provide those names? What are the two major categories of transport proteins, functionally speaking? You're getting into subcategories. The two are channel proteins and carrier proteins. All right? A channel protein acts just like the name indicates. It's like a little tunnel. Now, the tunnel might not always be open because it could be gated. But assuming that the gate is open, a channel is just a passageway. And if you're the right kind of particle to get through that passageway and there's a gradient in place, you're going to go a certain direction that is determined entirely by the direction of the gradient. Right? On the other hand, a carrier protein briefly interacts, much more than a channel protein does, with the permeating particle. There is a temporary binding between the particle and the carrier protein. That changes the shape of the protein in such a way that it releases it to the other side. So a carrier protein has to change shape in order for it to transport the particle, whatever that particle is. Well, diffusion can happen using either one of these two types of transport proteins. The only reason the protein is there is because that particular kind of thing can't get right through the phospholipid bilayer. On the other hand, active transport moves things against their gradient. So it takes a particle from where it's already relatively rare and puts it to an area where it's already relatively enriched. In other words, it stockpiles something. Well, that's moving it in exactly the opposite direction that it would like to diffuse in. And that's why you have to provide energy for that. It's going from a more stable to a more unstable situation. A gradient is an unstable situation. It wants to dissipate energetically to go to zero. Active transport creates and maintains a gradient. Well, the last thing I want to say today is that if you're going to use active transport, which we typically call pumps, then not only are you using a transport protein, but specifically it has to be a carrier protein, not a channel. Because if you open up a channel, the only thing that's going to happen is it's going to leak down its gradient. You have to actually grab onto a particle and put it to the side that it doesn't want to travel in if you're going to actively transport it. Okay, that's it.